welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by the one and only EEJournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and where in the world is Fish Fry headed this week? To Mexico, that's where. Because, yes, I am tired of all this Portland rain. I've had it. I'm going down south for some sun, margaritas, and robots. Yep, you heard me right. Robots. Okay, I have a joke for you. What's the difference between a human and a pile of rocks? A robot algorithm. Of course. You saw that coming, didn't you? Okay. All right, fine. Here comes the robot part. Mexico's University of Guadalajara is currently working on an innovative new robot that will be on the front lines of disaster relief. This new robot, which is based on iRobot's 110 First Look robot, actually uses a pattern recognition algorithm to differentiate between piles of rubble and the silhouette of a human body. This team of researchers from the University of Guadalajara in Mexico have developed a neural network that will allow this small robot to, eventually, not only detect the shapes of human bodies, but also identify a whole slew of different patterns and images, including fingerprints, handwriting, voice frequencies, and DNA sequences. So, how exactly are they going to do this? Well, first, the robot used in this project is actually based on iRobot's 110 First Look robot, which I mentioned earlier, which has been coined as the world's first throwable robot. Now, if you can throw it, it's probably not that big, right? This bad boy only measures at about 10 inches long, 9 inches wide, 4 inches tall, and weighs a measly 5 pounds, give or take. This throwable robot has been equipped with motion sensors, cameras, including, most importantly, a stereoscopic HD camera, an infrared system, a laser, and a flashlight. Now, it's actually the flashlight and the stereoscopic HD camera that allows the robot to see the environment around it. And then the descriptor system pinpoints the 3D points to segment, and then applies numerical values to the images. This helps it identify the color, shape, and density of these shapes. When these values are put together, a new image is then passed through a filter to determine if it is indeed a human silhouette or not. Now, I see your question in the back there. Is the algorithm actually on the robot itself? Well, at first, yes, but in subsequent trials, this team at UDG found that it was best to run the algorithm on a separate laptop and control the robot wirelessly. The ultimate goal of this project at the University of Guadalajara is to train this robot to automatically classify human shapes from its previous experience. Pretty cool indeed. If you want any further information about this new first responder robot, check out the link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on EEJournal.com. And now it's time for an interview that has absolutely nothing to do with human silhouettes or disaster relief. This week, I'm calling all y'all system designers, come and get it. This week, my guest is Bill Neifert from Carbon Design Systems, and we're talking about exchanging IP, virtual prototypes, and the power of the man cave. Check it out. Hi, Bill. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
So, Bill, Carbon Design Systems just launched a new web portal called Carbon System Exchange, which is a complement to Carbon IP Exchange, I believe. So, first, for my audience who may not know, what is Carbon IP Exchange?
That's a great question, Amelia. Carbon IP Exchange is a web portal that we have which is focused entirely upon the automatic creation of accurate models. As you may or may not know, we have relationships in place with Arm, Cadence, Imagination, and other leading IP providers to automatically create models from their RTL, which are 100% accurate, and which we make available to our users for integration into their own SoC designs. We used to do the creation of these models manually, which means we used to send out a spreadsheet to the user and say, here, please fill in the configuration options that you'd like, and send it back to us, and we'll send you a model. The problem we had with this is that every single spreadsheet came back filled out incorrectly, either because the users didn't know or didn't understand or whatever, the exact options that were supported inside of the RTL. So now we needed to undergo a negotiation process with each user on what options they were really seeking in here and try and rectify those with what was actually supported inside of the RTL. Carbon IP Exchange automated all of this because for each piece of IP, we have a corresponding web page which enables the user to go through and select the configuration options that they would like for that particular model, and it will then go through, confirm the options, and automatically build the model for them and make it available for download. So Carbon IP Exchange is a great portal which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to automate the configuration, compilation, and management of these virtual models by our end users.
I also saw something about carbon performance analysis kits. Now, can you tell me what that's all about?
So when we started supplying models out to the end user, they said, well, that's fantastic, but how do I use all of this? It's one thing to have a model and an open canvas, and another thing to have an open system. And if you look at the people that are trying to use virtual prototypes nowadays, you know, it's software guys and architects, folks that don't necessarily have the desire or skill necessary to actually assemble a complete virtual system in order to do this, but they do know that they want to use it. So we had a number of customers come to us and basically say, can you supply me with system X or something that does this? So we started assembling very simple systems probably a year and a half or so ago, which just contained a processor and a memory and fabric in there and, you know, maybe some very simple configuration. And, of course, users got a smell of this and started saying, oh, I'd like this variation. I'd like this variation. And quickly, we started creating a much, much more additional CPACs to meet this need. And CPACs are basically pre-built virtual prototype systems that come complete with software that runs at either the bare metal or the system level, which enable people to get up and running more quickly. Now, we don't expect that a CPAC is going to be able to map 100% onto what the end user is doing, but it is a great starting point to get people up and running more quickly. So each CPAC ships with the source code for the software that we ship with it, be that at the bare metal or OS level, and of course also with the editable project file, so you can extend, modify, or replace any of the components in the project, and you can also add additional components to it as well. So most of our users will take a CPAC, download it, and do some initial use with it, be it doing performance analysis or booting an OS or whatever the design task may be, and then start customizing it. And customization can entail something as simple as adding an additional component on there, and a GPU seems to be the number one component that people seem to like to add to our CPACs, or it can be more involved, such as replacing the fabric with different piece of IP or a different memory map and such from there. And then that's as simple as either going back to IP Exchange and creating a new model and then dropping it onto the canvas, or right-clicking an existing model and dropping it into there. Or you can, of course, add models by bring them in from Carbon Model Studio, which is our own compiler to compile RTL into an accurate model, or you can bring in your own System C model. So there are a variety of ways that you can take this CPAC and extend it in order to meet your actual design needs.
So how does Carbon System Exchange work, and what's all involved with this new web portal?
Well, Carbon System Exchange came to us because we had all these CPACs. In fact, there are over 100 of them that exist today, and we had them all, and they could only really be found via Carbon IP Exchange. And it's difficult if you're looking for a system to always find the system that you want if you're going to a portal based upon models. So, for example, we have 29 at current count different CPACs that contain the CCI 400. If I want to know which CPAC is right for me, with IP Exchange, I can go and I can generate a list of all of the CPACs that have this. But now I need to sort through this and figure out which one has the right combination of software and hardware components along with it. System Exchange is a nice front end to access all of our pre-built CPACs and enable you to sort on the things that matter to you, such as IP. And this IP could be any one or a combination of the processor or processors, the fabric, the memory controller, the software that runs on top of it, because, you know, as I mentioned, CPACs can support both bare metal and OS-level software, and also any additional software which may be running on top of this, or any additional components that may be contained inside of this. This also opens up a new interesting aspect. Out and started talking to our partners about this. I showed them what we were going to be doing with these CPACs, and each one of them clambered up and said, well, you know, I'd really like a CPAC to show off my IP, or a CPAC to show off my software. So we quickly started adding a new ecosystem set of partners up here who wanted to add their own CPACs to either feature their own IP or to feature their own software on this. So you can also search on here by publisher. And so we've added a variety of publishers into our ecosystem as well, from the IP providers such as Arteris to software providers such as Brecker, which we just announced earlier this week, who does software-driven verification, to actual system development providers such as OpenSilicon, who have a great amount of expertise in developing their own virtual prototypes and layering their own software on top of this. So CPACs serve to be a great demonstration vehicle for them, and you can look for the specific publisher on System Exchange as well. So System Exchange is a great way for further streamlining the access that people have to these pre-built CPACs or virtual prototypes that come complete with software.
So, Bill, what kind of designers do you think would benefit the most from the Carbon System Exchange?
Well, it's interesting because historically, Carbon has appealed a lot to the architect, the person really trying to do the initial performance optimization on the design, trying to figure out what configuration of IP works best for them or what piece of IP works best for them. And they still comprise a good number of our user base. But what these CPACs have done and System Exchange has done has broadened it out to the range of people who don't necessarily have the expertise, desire, or time to create the virtual system themselves. So this means folks like firmware engineers, even performance analysis engineers or software bring-up engineers can all get value from this as well, because they can download these pre-built systems and be productive with them pretty immediately. In fact, it's not unprecedented for a design team to download this and get value within minutes, or it requires customization within an hour or so of download, and be far more productive this way. We like to say that you spend less time creating the virtual prototype and more time using the virtual prototype and getting value from the virtual prototype. So System Exchange really helps extend that out and get access to the higher range of users than the ones that just have the expertise to create the virtual prototype themselves.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. So, Bill, I heard you're renovating your basement to include a man cave. Now, what cool stuff are you going to have in your man cave?
Well, first I got to finish this. This, as all projects seem to do, has grown from the couple of weekend project, which I initially scoped it out to be, to the multi-month, let's dig up and replace the stairs and all the walls type activity. Once this is done, though, I'm hoping to put in a very nice HDTV system down there, hiding all of the components off in the closet. You don't need to ever see them again, all controlled via smartphone and tied into a complete home automation system down there. Basically, a system probably sufficiently complex that only I will ever be able to actually use it, and which will take far more time than I'll ever actually have to set it up and take advantage of it.
Yep, Bill, I know that pain very well. I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Bill. This was super cool stuff.
Thanks a lot, Amelia. I appreciate the time.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, well, yes, you can join our circle there as well. We also have a YouTube channel chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very own Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can also grab our Fish Fry RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 24th, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.